Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell.
And hey, I met you. You are not cool.
With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick.
I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-R-T.
And Josh Adams.
You goddamn communist heathen, you had best sound off that you love the Virgin Mary, or I'm going to stomp your guts out. Now, you do love the Virgin Mary, don't you?
Visit us at IHateCritics.net, EveryonesACriticPodcast.com, IHateCritics.com, Facebook, Everyone's a Critic Podcast. We also have a group there if you want to join that. Our Twitter and Instagram handles is our Critics Pod. There you can participate in our top fives, watch trailers, read the news, watch us troll each other, or Josh, whatever. Watch Beth come in there and help troll with us.
Yeah, there is no escape. She's online. She's at home.
Good times.
She's like the Russian. She might be Russian.
Well, as you know, the Russians are okay. So
we're I forgot. Yeah.
Good friends.
He's Sean's not turned on.
It's okay.
Good people on both sides. what? Numbnuts.
What'd I miss?
Oh, you didn't miss anything. The joys of doing a podcast with one other host instead of two. Sometimes I have to turn a microphone off. And
oh.
So you may have missed something Sean said. I probably won't even edit it out. So.
Fake news. It never happened.
Maybe the Patreon listeners can get it edited out, but the non...
Oh, there you go.
What else am I forgetting? I got the social media stuff. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, all your podcatchers. Hopefully someday Alexa. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. Write and review the show. We'll read it on the air. We had one somewhat recent, but before that it's been a long time. It'd be nice to get a few in a row. It really helps us out moving up the charts if they kind of come in bunches. So get out there and review the show.
Your inclusion of how Home Alone should have gone in the modern day or whatever got a lot of attention from some that we hadn't heard from before. You know, whenever we get a like on a post in social media or something like that, I always want to hit that invite button. But it's kind of like it's aggressive stalking, you know?
Right. I'm with you. Every time I see a name that I don't see regularly or brand new, it gets exciting for a little bit. It's like, oh, another interaction.
Yes.
Keep it coming. What else is there? Patreon. That's another way to help us out. The best way, IHateCritics.net/Patreon. We do have a new subscriber this week. It seems those bonus shows are actually working now. Cousin Jeff jumped on at the character level.
Yeah, isn't it amazing when we actually do the bonus episodes? That we talk about so much. But hey, we got another one coming up.
Yeah, we got one in the can. We're planning on another one. So we're going to get a couple bunched up here and then start slowly releasing them. So jump on board to hear those. If anybody has had any problems getting to your bonus Patreon episodes, hit me up on Facebook and I'll try to address it. I think I've figured out Jason from Mexico had some problems. I think he got his going. Corey, I don't think he had problems. He might have problems with the first one. So just if there's any problems, let me know, and I'll try to get you your episodes. And at some point, we'll get to some more merch. It's my big problem is I'm not a graphic designer. I don't know one that well. So it's hard to get someone to help me turn our logo into a shirt that looks good or a mug or another mug or glasses. Plus, there's not that many of you to buy them. So we're working on that, and then I do want to start working on the book again. We do have it in a Google Doc ready to manipulate. So all that stuff's coming down the pipeline thanks to the Patreon supporters. News this week. Let's start with Neil Blomkamp and his new venture now that Alien can't happen.
Note that I did not post this.
Oh, no, I did.
Okay. He took great joy in the death of Neil Blomkamp's Alien sequel.
Okay.
That was me, actually.
I just laughed.
Oh, was it really you?
No, I just took joy in it.
I posted it.
He just posted it.
I posted it because I knew Josh was really looking forward to this alien thing, and I wasn't not looking forward to it. I like Neil Blomkamp, and I really like District 9. I think that's a phenomenal movie, and I was curious what he'd do, but this just makes me laugh, because I know you hate RoboCop, and he's going to make a direct sequel to RoboCop.
It came out of nowhere, too. I mean, you hear nothing about RoboCop at all. They do a remake with Joel Kinnaman and Michael Keaton in 2014, I think, and it was
incredibly lame.
I liked it. Like, it, if you have 87 RoboCop and the Joel Kinnaman RoboCop next to each other, there's just no contest. The Joel Kinnaman one is better. Way better.
It's better. It's still, it's lame, but it's much better than that piece of crap from the 80s, yes.
We'll find middle ground on that, at least. But RoboCop Returns is actually being planned as a direct sequel to 87's RoboCop. Now, I haven't heard any other details other than Neil Blomkamp is going to write it and direct it. Nothing about Peter Weller or Nancy Allen returning to the fold or something silly like that. I would assume that there will be a new actor cast in the role, or if they're going to play Peter Weller older, that would be weird.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean,
Terminator did it.
Isn't it basically just a remake of RoboCop then, if you're casting somebody other than Peter Weller?
Yeah.
So it's just a remake then. It's not
Mainly, it seems like it's right in Blomkamp's wheelhouse in terms of what he likes to do with science fiction. The discussion of artificial intelligence, the discussion of cool robots and cool weapons.
The discussion of cool robots.
For the discussion of cool robots.
Chappie.
Sorry. I own Chappie. I'll stick behind that movie. I don't know what that means, but... Point is that I think it's kind of a silly project, to be honest. I don't know what they're planning on getting out of it, because not so long ago that remake didn't do all that well.
Hollywood marketers are the most they're an insidious group. They are, because they found yet another way. First it was remakes, and then it was reboots, and now it's direct sequels to things that happened before, because Halloween is this upcoming Halloween is a direct sequel to the first one. And now this one is going to be a direct sequel to RoboCop. Cool. They're going to keep doing this, aren't they? This is the new thing now. They're going to find other properties and skip all the sequels and do direct sequels
this
now.
This isn't new. Our podcast, our very first episode we ever did off the first movie, was about a horror movie that was a direct sequel to the original, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's the very first episode we ever did. So it's not that new.
I thought that was a remake.
No, it was this number. It was a sequel to the one with Jessica Biel was a remake, but then they did a direct sequel to the original one.
See, I didn't even remember that. But
right,
I don't remember listening to that very first episode that you guys had. But you know, that was over 5 years ago, right? And this seems to be definitely more of a trend. If you go back a couple of years and talk about Blomkamp's sequel to Aliens, ignoring Alien 3 and Resurrection, and then the Terminator film that's coming out next year is a direct sequel to Terminator 2, it does seem to be more of a trend, because as you're saying, Sean, it's like the next mine that hasn't been fully like scraped yet.
Stripped.
All things that involve removing natural resources, a.k.a.
The bottom line is that it's empty now. The remake thing is empty now. The reboot thing is empty now. They've destroyed it. They've destroyed every possible project they can make. Now it's this.
And you're going to see why. I mean, you finally get, I don't want to call it an original idea, but a new movie that's not attached to any other properties. Halfway Bombs this week. The only movie to be, you know... You almost have to have a property behind you, and even then you're not guaranteed success solo. But, yeah, I don't know. What if he takes his alien idea and just applies it to RoboCop? I don't know how he would do that, but I mean, just spitballing here. Would that upset you?
Oh, the 87, to be honest, the 87 RoboCop film, though, I have no allegiance to that. So whatever he wants to do with it,
well,
fine.
I'm saying
you're
basing the alien idea on RoboCop. That's what I'm saying.
The application of what he was talking about wouldn't seem to make sense in a RoboCop way.
Well, I'm guessing, I don't really know because I don't look at that stuff, but like the general story, you could work into a RoboCop, I'm assuming. What was he trying to do with the new Alien movie?
Well, in theory, Hicks and Ripley and Newt survive, and Bishop would have been involved too. The piece of Bishop that was sitting there would have been involved as aliens come to Earth, it seemed. So,
RoboCop saves them. Oh, my God. Well, maybe it is going to happen.
If you want to go really down the rabbit hole, there is RoboCop versus Aliens in Dark Horse Comics.
Directed by Neil Blomkamp. They just haven't called it that yet. That's what it is.
Okay, that's when I'll light my head on fire, if that happens. It would be bad enough to have Alien versus Predator again, but RoboCop versus Aliens, any of that nonsense versus comic Predator. Stuff. Versus Terminator. Because RoboCop versus Terminator existed, too.
Versus Ash from The Evil Dead.
Oh, my God.
What about Freddy and Jason?
All of our movies are in shared one shared cinematic universe.
And then it's all revealed to be Cabin in the Woods 2. Oh, my God. Alternate universe.
Directed by Neil Blomkamp.
That would be the only shitty part of it.
In a way, this sounds very meta. Hollywood just finally, the universe is collapsing back on itself.
Well, what they're doing is just shitty. I mean, they stopped being good at this movie. Let's make a sequel that we fucked up on and try again.
Yeah, ignore everything that you've invested time in, story-wise, et cetera, et cetera. And even when actors were involved in said shitty sequels, like, I haven't seen RoboCop 2 or 3. I don't know if Nancy Allen is involved with those, but Peter Weller is only involved in number 2, if I'm not mistaken. Like, Terminator Genisys, Arnold's in there, you know. What are you doing? I don't know.
Nothing wrong with a mulligan.
Sure. I guess.
And then on the topic of good movies that will probably lose money, this Dune thing that Denis Villeneuve, how do you say it?
Villeneuve.
I keep thinking of Hector Villanueva, the old Cubs catcher.
I know that's not the answer.
Thank you.
So I can't say it, so I just start making up noises at the end of his name. Timothy Chalamet or whatever is in talks to star in it. Two guys I like a lot, and a movie I just don't see it making money, and it bothers me. I don't want him to have two failures in a row financially when he's as talented as he is.
Is Elon Musk behind this?
Well, like, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
There's a whole thing on Twitter about him talking about the spice must flow.
Ooh.
People were making up memes about it. It got weird. It got weird for a little bit on Twitter just about a week ago. But I don't really have any kind of frame of reference. I didn't really watch much of the original Dune.
The original movie isn't very good. And we're talking about the cut that I saw on DVD, which wasn't David Lynch's cut, as I understand it. It's got Alan Smithy, in fact, as the director's name. But it's got some great visuals to it. I am kind of interested in what the books would be. Those books are vast, and there are many of them, and that requires a great deal of time to invest in that. I would go ahead and watch Denis Villeneuve's movie any day over having to read a massive book by Frank Herbert. But it has such a following, and it's kind of like the Blade Runner following in a way.
That's a bad example.
I understand what you're saying.
You said the Lord of the Rings following, I'd be like, now you got a point.
It totally is not as well known as Lord of the Rings, but I still love the thought of a master filmmaker making something in the genre of science fiction. That's really cool. And if let's just say Elon Musk was behind it, then that's just like throwaway money, so who cares?
Yeah, in that case, yeah.
He spends more money on the Republican caucus than he does on this movie.
Oh, God.
I still want to see Jodorowsky's Doom. That's what I really want to see.
The documentary, right?
Yeah.
And then Josh, we all watched one trailer, and Sean saw another one. Mary, Queen of Scots, Margot Robbie, Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. That was a really great trailer. I can't say much more than that. It looks like it's going to win every Oscar.
It sure looks great. Then again, it could be something really neat in terms of a period drama, a period action drama, if that. Or it could be Elizabeth. Elizabeth the Golden Age, you know, where
both of those were pretty good.
They're good in that you can sense the prestige behind it. And Kate Blanchett's really good in the role. She was nominated twice, I think.
And the first film got a Best Picture nomination.
It did. But I didn't think it was very good as a whole. Kind of drab and...
Well, that's what I'm worried about with this, is I think they look great in it. I like both of them. They're two of the best working actresses out there right now. I just don't know that I care about this movie. And that's kind of what... And I know I don't care about Elizabeth, so that's kind of where I'm... Where will it be homework or not? I'm sure at some point we'll have to watch this movie for the awards, and hopefully it doesn't feel like homework when it comes, but that's what I'm worried about.
Those are two of the better actresses working today, too, so...
And Margot Robbie seems like she could go off and start doing Avenger movies, and she keeps picking movies like this, which... I like that about her, and Saoirse Ronan hasn't even come close to a messed up yet.
And yet Margot Robbie just went direct to DVD. It was her last film. I can't even remember the name of it, but
yeah. And then today it was announced that the Birds of Prey cast for DC, in which she's involved in. just the entire lineup was revealed today.
So. But she's still doing the. You know, you're not seeing Scarlett Johansson do it as much. She had a couple here and there, but for the most part, she keeps doing Lucy and Ghost and whatever. So it's nice to see that she's still doing the movies like this that are real and not just a franchise. But I guess you have to do both to make your career continue.
You hear, by the way, there are two pieces of Scarlett Johansson news this week. There may be a director what's her character?
Black Widow.
Black Widow movie. I forgot. Okay. There may be a director for that, but also she dropped out of the movie Rub and Tug, in which she was supposed to play a trans person. And that had been a very controversial thing, that kind of like her Ghost in the Shell role, where people were like, why can't you cast a trans actor in a trans role? And she dropped out finally, which is good, because really, why not cast a trans actor for once who actually understands this idea?
Why not cast a trans actor as Black Widow or anything? I mean, that's really what the argument is. And now this is going to be a straight-to-DVD movie instead of a possible art, you know, I don't know the... You know what I'm saying? Now you're not going to be able to hit the art house theaters even, probably. Unless the buzz from this happened got it there, but I don't know.
I think if it's a good movie, it'll rise regardless.
If it even gets made. That's kind of... But yeah, what was the trailer you saw?
I saw the trailer for this movie about Ruth Bader Ginsburg that's coming out. It's not the documentary RBG, which... came out earlier this year or late last year. This is actually a movie with Felicity Jones playing Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the role, talking about the court case that made her famous. And she got her, I believe, one of the first women to stand in front of the Supreme Court. And of course, obviously, she's a Supreme Court justice now, but this is about the earlier earlier portion of her life. And yeah, I've criticized Felicity Jones a lot, but this trailer has a lot of promise, and it's a very compelling story, a very compelling woman, to be sure.
Directed by Dinesh D'Souza? No?
No. No.
All right. We have not much to talk about. That's why we took 20 minutes to get to the movie part of the show. Hotel Transylvania 3 Summer Vacation.
You know, I've not liked the first two of these Hotel Transylvania movies. I thought
you love this one. Oh my god,
love is a strong word. Let's go.
Movie of the week.
It is the best movie this week. It is the best movie this week. My love is way too strong. This story goes that Drac and his family are going on a cruise. He doesn't want to. His daughter's making him go, and he decides to go. And he meets a girl. And falls in love, but the complication is that the girl is the daughter of the Van Helsing family. She's voiced by Catherine Hahn, and she's trying to kill him for the first half of the movie. And then they do have a kind of a romantic scene, and she begins to kind of turn around, and that's where kind of the plot begins to turn. And is the movie stupid? Of course it's stupid. Yes, it's stupid, but at least it's stupid in a far more interesting and entertaining way than the first two were. This one's got a real genuine conflict to it with his character and Catherine Hahn's character. They do have a good characters have an interesting dynamic with her being a Van Helsing and him being Dracula and him not knowing that she's trying to kill him. I enjoyed the scene where she's kind of running around. She's trying to get her hands on this thing that's able to kill him or able to kill monsters in general. And he doesn't know that's what she's trying to do. So she keeps getting into this trouble, like these Indiana Jones traps keep springing up as she's trying to get to it. And he keeps saving her with his Dracula powers. And it's kind of cute and funny the way they do that. The scene plays out in a very funny way. I also, you know, every weird thing kind of comes around once and has another cultural moment. And this one is where the Macarena kind of comes around and has this weird little cultural moment. Because they use the Macarena in this, and it made me laugh. I felt bad laughing because I was like, that should not be ever heard of again, but it made me laugh how they used it here. And so this movie made me laugh at least three times. There's one actually pretty good scene right at the start of the movie where, I didn't like the first two movies, but the first two movies did anything. They established that the character of Frank, voiced by Kevin James, goes nuts when he sees fire. So there's a very good scene at the beginning of the movie where they're on a train and Van Helsing is making his way up trying to find them and they're all hiding. And Van Helsing comes in and he knows exactly how to find them. So he pulls out a book of matches and then they cut to Frank kind of sweating. And then they cut back to the matches and he takes a match out and they cut around again. And then they come back to the matches and he strikes the match. Frank goes nuts, flies off the train. It's a funny scene. It pays off and it's built properly like an actual scene. So I'm giving them credit because they weren't able to do this before in these movies. They were just, before it was just a lot of shouting. At least this time they took the time to actually build the joke into something. So I got to give them credit for that. I like this movie. I especially since how much I hated the first two, it says a lot that they improved this much.
It's weird. I liked the first two. Didn't like this one. Oddly enough, the first two I liked. And it's created by Jendy Tartakovsky, a guy that had some animation in the past that people are fans of, including me, involving Star Wars. It's really good animation, really strong storytelling. And then it gets goofy in this one. There's a lot of awkwardness and corniness going on in this movie to the nth degree where the other ones didn't necessarily do that. I like the character of Blobby very much for whatever reason. He's just kind of a goofy-looking character that doesn't say anything, and then when things happen to him, he, you know, will excrete another blob or something. And then there's glow sticks inside of him when they're going off to a dance. All right, I kind of dig that, but the whole end set piece involving a Kraken being turned left, right, and whatever, good, then evil, then good again, is just, it's one of the dumbest things that I've seen in animation.
It was very dumb. I liked how dumb it was. That's why I liked it, because it was so stupid.
I guess I couldn't turn my brain off like that because it just rubbed me the wrong way with an otherwise heartfelt story and some occasional actual laughs, like you said. But boy, I said to myself, if my son agrees to go to this, then we've got movie passes and it's only going to cost this amount to go, and then I'll get a theatrical release in for our show here. And he said yes, and then I almost wished he hadn't. But lo and behold, I saw a theatrical release. Thanks, Patreon supporters.
I saw one too.
Yes.
Skyscraper.
Yeah, Skyscraper starring The Rock, who's now 0-2 in 2018 with me. This one stunk. I really hated this. He plays a security expert. He's hired to go look over the security at the Pearl. It's this the world's biggest building built by some billionaire. And of course, there are terrorists who are trying to get at the billionaire who's got something hidden inside the Pearl. And who cares? This movie was interminable. It was long, and I'm just kind of just get it over with already. I knew where every little beat was going, and I could see what every little thing that was going to happen next was going to happen. And for some reason, The Rock plays all of this so flat. I mean, The Rock does not play flat. He doesn't do it. The only good thing about Rampage was that he's occasionally charming. This movie, he's not even charming. He's just kind of there. He's trying to be an everyman, and I'm sorry, dude. You're built like a brick shithouse. You're not going to be a fucking everyman. You're just not.
He's missing a foot. That evens it out,
kind of. Yeah. A magic foot that can do just about anything. It's really, oh man, I just hated every second of this. I was so, just, I just couldn't get excited even about the dumbest stuff. whether it's him jumping through the window or him climbing that crane, which, how, you know, he climbed 90 stories on a crane and it somehow isn't exciting.
In practically real time.
Right. Wow.
It does go on quite a while when he's climbing that crane.
It's oh man, this movie. I hated every second of it.
I won't go that far. I called it a solid action flick, but by solid, I'm giving it a lot of leeway because it's an action movie and it's nothing more than that. You are right. The Rock, he's playing it like Keanu Reeves played Speed, which in a Rock movie doesn't really. You want the Rock to be Bruce Willis or, you know, someone with charisma and charm. He's got like one joke in the whole movie, and it's not even. It's like, you use duct tape for everything. And he says it like standing on a ledge or something. I don't even remember when he said it, but no one was around to hear it.
Yeah. that's another weird thing about this movie. There are multiple times where characters will say something that is, and one guy actually talking specifically about the plot in a room by himself just says out loud an important plot point. Like, what the fuck? There's nobody else around when he says this.
But for the action fan, it's the type of movie they would like. I guess I have a hard time calling it like the worst movie of all time or of the year or anything.
Oh, is that Maze Runner bad? Let's not get that far.
If you let everything happen and don't even try to, you know, figure it out. You know, if you take the fact that we've seen a million movies away and
just lay back and get it over with.
Put yourself in the mindset of, you know, the average action fan, that's all they watch. You could see why they'd like it, I guess. I mean, it accomplishes everything it's going for except for a profit. So it's not as good as Rampage. I thought Rampage was a ton of fun. This isn't fun as much as it's suspenseful, except for you, the three of us could sit there and go, well, this is clear what's going to happen. But if you allow the suspense to happen,
You know
how you bring things to a movie? You have to actually take things from the movie as a constant moviegoer to truly appreciate the suspense.
I know exactly of this. What you mean.
If you're like 12, maybe this movie is like
my 6-year-old
amazing.
Was with me. If you're 12 or my brother-in-law.
Maybe if you've had a full frontal lobotomy, this movie is amazing.
Or my brother-in-law. Either one of them, I don't know. Yeah, I would never call it amazing. There's too many things where you could just be like, why are we even in this situation from the get-go? You know, we were saying that when we were talking about the trailer the first time we saw it before they showed it before every movie, almost as much as Mission Impossible.
Yeah, in the way that trailer played out, it was almost as if it was a sequel to San Andreas. I remember us talking about that. Could it work as a sequel to San Andreas?
I doubt it. I mean, I don't know. It's pretty. It's just basically it's Speed without. It's except for with the bad guy in Speed is one guy. This is like an army of people, so that it doesn't make sense. So you can't. There's just so many things that prevent it from being Speed. is what. But that's kind of the action movie they're aimed that die. Not even I don't. As much as you want to compare it to Die Hard, there's no. There's no John McClane in this movie. I mean, obviously The Rock is playing that character, but there's no charisma whatsoever. So it's played more for a straight-up suspense with no jokes at all other than a duct tape joke.
Yeah, and not a particularly good one.
No.
A towering lame inferno.
Pretty much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized, undisputed
classic.
Number 18 in 1988. Squeezed and pulled and hurt my neck in 1988.
Squeezed and pulled and hurt your neck in 1988.
Die Hard.
Die Hard. This is a true classic. This is what an action movie should be. Bruce Willis, of course, is John McClane. He's traveled to Los Angeles to see his wife Holly and their two kids for Christmas. She's gone ahead several months earlier to take a job with the Nakatomi Group, and she's now, you know, she's there and he's coming there and he's arriving. And when he arrives, there's a party going on, and that party is interrupted by terrorists led by Hans Gruber, played by Alan Rickman, in a performance that deserved an Academy Award, honestly.
Everything he does.
True. That's true. Even his Sheriff of Nottingham.
Oh, it's yeah.
Like a nearly Academy Award level ham performance. He's just amazing. This movie is fucking brilliant. I can watch this movie 1,000 times and just enjoy it every single time. The action is great, but the character of John McClane is just purely iconic, because that is an everyman character. As much as he has skills that are a little bit beyond yours and mine in terms of intuition or just, you know, that kind of cop instinct, it's still just he looks like a regular guy, he talks like a regular guy, and that makes such a big difference. Not to mention that it's not necessarily a macho thing, whereas like the Schwarzeneggers, Van Damme's, all those guys are just, they're doing this really macho thing. There's an almost deconstructionist quality to John McClane's manliness, and that he sees all these idiots acting, you know, dick first, and he's going, no, don't do that. That's, you're going to get yourself killed. And what happens? Two of those idiots get themselves killed, and Robinson, the LAPD guy, looks like an asshole the entire time because he's leading with his dick the whole time. And McClane is calling that out, and it's almost like there's almost a level of deconstruction there that I think is just another layer of how great this movie is.
McTiernan, the director of this and other films that are under the action category, perhaps, he really understands this formula really well. And it's produced by Joel Silver, too. They have a particular formula that worked really well for a few films, including Die Hard with a Vengeance. Rennie Harlan ended up directing the second one, but I like the casting of this movie so much. Even the smaller characters, like the newscaster, Mary Ellen Trainer is the co-anchor. Say again, I'm sorry?
Carl Winslow
is the everyman cop. Paul Gleason as Dwayne Robinson, the police deputy chief that is messing everything up. The two Johnsons, Robert DeVee and Grand L. Bush, those are guys that those faces you recognize, and they're just awful. I mean, everything that they do is, as you say, dick first. It builds up John McClane as the hero, although he's being an everyman. So there's nothing necessarily that he does that's extraordinary for powers. It's more of the decisions that he makes. And so when you're watching it, you're kind of like, yeah, I can imagine myself doing that,
right?
Kind of, sort of. You know. And so this is one of the best action films of all time, and one of the most watchable films of all time, too. The villain by Hans Gruber is iconic because he's kind of relatable in a way. Like, he's not the giving you a monologue about every single thing that he's going to do, and you don't learn his true motives until towards the end of the film. So everything that he's stating or whatnot, it's not this grand performance, even though he's very recognizable in the role. So it makes everything work really, really well. Even Alexander Godunov in this movie, with the long flowing blonde hair or whatnot, he's so perfect as the super aggressive, almost Aryan looking guy. I mean, it's just perfectly cast, and it's nearly a flawless movie. I watched it on Saturday night and tried to pick out something that I could say, well, that's a little awkward, that doesn't work, or anything like that. And if there's anything, it's just the titles. They're a little too in my face. I don't know. But, I mean, again, that's being very, very picky, because all of the titles in this franchise are the same. So
right.
It's pretty much a perfect movie and deserving of the actual moniker classic, which is rare in this segment lately.
Yeah, and now I'm with you. I've never been... Like, I don't like Die Hard as much as everybody else does. I do like it, but I mean, I'll take Lethal Weapon every day of the week to this.
As will I.
And a lot of other movies, too. But it's definitely, I agree with everything everybody's saying. I just, it is a fun movie to watch. And it's funny when you say, like, the macho, it takes it out of the character, but puts it in you, the person watching it, going, I could do that. I could imagine myself.
Dude's even wearing a white tank, you know, like right. The entire film.
It's kind of funny how they do that, and, you know, you keep enough of the macho to get rid of it. I don't know. It's just, it's a lot of fun. Bruce Willis, and just the lines, even when he's saying when no one's around, is entertaining because it's funny and they're memorable and you're quoting them to this day. It's just a great movie, and it is cool to see Carl Winslow interacting with John McClane.
My favorite scene, though, and you were talking about Rickman before. He's not at all sympathetic, and you don't identify with him because he is definitely the bad guy. But right. The scene with him and Ellis is such a perfectly brilliant comic scene because Rickman is dripping with contempt for this character. He just, the moment he sees Ellis, he cannot stand him. But he's just taking him in and drawing him closer. He knows he's going to kill this guy, but he's going to use him for what this little tiny purpose that he has. But the contempt dripping from every word that he says. He can't even look him in the eye because he knows he'll just probably want to just shoot him in the face right then. It is such a great scene and just such an impeccable performance.
The Ellis character, Hart Bochner, I think is the actor's name. My best man at my first wedding talks exactly like Ellis. Okay, and if he was on the show, I think he would agree that he has the same cadence, the same rhythm. And when he's putting the sales pitch for Don's Gruber, I can just funnel this guy through him, but it's without the dick intentions of Ellis, you know? So I'm watching my friend get his head blown, well, hearing him and get his head blown off.
He's the type of character that you go, well, there's a flaw in the movie. And they're like, no, he's supposed to be.
Talking about McTiernan, he never does anything this good ever. Again, in the rest of his career, he really doesn't do anything. This
what else
good.
Has he done?
Predator. Hunt for Red October. Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Like I said, he never does anything this good again.
I like
he does Rollerball at some point. Rollerball is one of the worst movies ever made, and that was McTiernan. I think this is easily the highlight of his career, and really, for me, like really the only great thing he ever did.
I like Part 3 better. Personally,
Samuel Jackson adds and Jeremy Irons too add a particular dimension that this one's missing, where you're confined to a space. Going all over New York opens up the Die Hard world. Even in 2, you're in an airport and you're confined to a specific space, and that's supposed to be the case. But I really like the tie-in as well to the first film with Die Hard with a Vengeance. You're right. It's excellent. Like, that is a trilogy. It's a great trilogy.
I think in the roast that's going to air next week, Demi Moore says something along the lines of, we were married during the first 3 Die Hard movies. That's why everyone afterwards sucked, or something like that.
And they also suck after Die Hard with a Vengeance because John McClane is different. Bruce Willis is playing him like
say
a straight
bad
man.
Words.
Well, of course, because they had to market it to the teenagers, but
he becomes everything he hates. He becomes that too macho for the room guy.
Yeah, he acts like a superhero.
Yeah,
you know, and the films don't work as a result, especially the fifth one.
Yeah, back to Predator.
Go on.
Well, before we get there, Bruce Willis came out and said that Die Hard is not a Christmas movie.
What?
And
bastard! What a betrayal!
But he's not wrong. I mean, what Christmas lessons do you learn? There's nothing.
He says ho, ho, ho in it.
Ho, ho, ho.
So
Christmas music. Come on, damn it.
I don't know. It's nice to impress girls and say it's not. But because of that, Beth posted Josh's other... that what do we think, and I just said I agree because I really don't give a shit one way or the other. You can categorize anything you want, really. But then she said something along the lines, I can't remember exactly how it was worded, but
we were having a discussion this past weekend about subgenres, okay, and how I classify films. All right, so Predator to me is an action film first, subgenre science fiction.
And before we did, we have this conversation on the bonus Patreon.
Yes, we did.
So you guys haven't heard this yet, and most of you won't hear it unless you become a Patreon
That's
supporter.
Right.
But yeah, we were talking about, you know, Terminator being science fiction first, action second. Predator was action first, something or other. Maybe I'm getting it wrong, but
this is in Josh's head.
So. Yes, and it's
I'm sorry.
And it was a fun conversation. And then she put something on Facebook like, Josh doesn't consider Die Hard an action movie. And then obviously you corrected that.
Yeah, but. That is not what I said. Die Hard is clearly an action film first. And I don't think it's a Christmas movie at all. I've never thought of it that way. And if anything, I would have said like, Lethal Weapon's a little bit more of a Christmas movie than this. Even though Lethal Weapon's not a Christmas movie. I mean,
at least there's suicide in it. You know, like well, perceived suicide.
Well done. But it does bring up a subject to me that is, I'm trying to clarify it for everyone. Just because a film is, say, like the best action film doesn't necessarily mean that I would rank it above the film as a whole. So in this case, A and B are both true. I still think Predator is not only better than Die Hard as an action film, it's better as a film. Now, the recency, there is no recency bias on either way. Like, I've seen both of these in the past
fairly
year.
Recent, yeah.
So I'm still cool with sticking with that. And this is part of my criteria to get down to the 50 best films that I have watched, or my 50 favorite films, at least.
My favorite's when he says, it's almost a real film, or something like that, when you said that about Wonder Woman, I think it was.
Or what I try and get at when I say that, yeah,
I know where what you mean.
It's like, it's a film first that happens to have superheroes in it, or it's a film first that happens to have aliens in it. You know, that hasn't happened yet, but you know what I'm saying.
Neither is a superhero thing either, but that's okay.
Oh, good God.
I'll correct you have one thing.
Yes.
Arrival has aliens in a movie. Is a movie first?
Yes, kind of. Yeah.
Arrival?
Yeah. So what I meant is the Alien franchise. There hasn't been a movie first in
not
the Alien
franchise
that happens to have aliens in it. No.
No, not that. No. Not even.
I still love you, Alien franchise. Don't abandon me. Ridley Scott has big news coming soon, so we're way off the Die Hard.
Yeah, I'm still curious where you are with Predator, though. I like it. It's fun, but I just don't.
All of the stuff that about, because weirdly enough, we're talking about, you're going to kill me for this one, but John McClane as an everyman and not a superhero action character, right? That to me, oh God. Please don't hurt me. That's Arnold's most vulnerable role to me, where he's like, he's not quite a superhero.
Kindergarten Cop?
of his action films, okay?
That's a comedy.
There we go.
Comedy, subgenre, Arnold.
Comedy,
film.
Real movie, action.
Honestly, Predator, though, he's fallible, whereas Terminator, he's kind of infallible. You know, they really don't defeat him. They defeat the machine. Red Heat, Commando, you know, all these things where he isn't very fallible. And then all of a sudden you get to Predator, and it's like, oh, shit, Arnold's going to die. You know, it's a little different there. And he's the grounded character where everyone else around him is kind of bigger than life. Handshake aside, okay, at the beginning of the film, but
you ever try to sit back and imagine what Josh's inside out characters are like?
Lewis Black is one of them. He is angered because I am Lewis Black.
That's
when
why
it's
he
angered.
Likes Inside Out so much. But
they're exhausted, is what I'm saying.
All the other.
Oh yes.
They're trapped inside that little contraption. I don't even remember what Inside Out, where they go. They just get lost. I remember that.
And I do have an imaginary, probably, thing rolling around. He's got glitter on him, I'm sure.
But all the peripheral characters in Predator, when they get shot by the Predator, they, like, explode, and Arnold doesn't.
I knew that as soon as I introduced the idea that he was somewhat fallible. Do you know what I mean, though? And I'm not saying the right words to frame my argument.
I know exactly what you mean. To me, it's still a goofy, fun movie. I like Predator. I think it's goofy and fun, but I still think the word goofy does belong in that
Absolutely.
Description of the movie.
And I would say that Arnold's most vulnerable role is twins, because he could easily be killed in that movie.
I can't compete with that. I mean, you're right.
Or Junior. He could die in childbirth.
So many lesser-known Ivan Reitman films going on right here. Twins, Kindergarten Cop, Junior, you know?
Well, Black Friday. You never know a jingle all the way.
Right. If only Jingle All the Way had been Black Friday, Black Christmas.
Black Christmas.
Bring those two universes together and you got a movie.
So, listeners, what do you think? Die Hard or Predator? I believe, you know, if we did Die Hard or Lethal Weapon, you and I'd be in the minority on that one, too. I think everybody, I mean.
I would definitely take Die Hard over Lethal Weapon.
And I think
that. As both a Christmas movie and an action movie.
But not a real movie, oddly enough. But that's, I think that's why I like Die Hard with a Vengeance so much, is because I like the buddy aspects of Samuel Jackson and Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Not that it's Riggs and Murtaugh, but it's something, you know, it's, you know, Loaded Weapon gave us that. But
sure, there's more to bounce off the charisma of Bruce Willis as John McClane in those first three films, especially in the third one, as opposed to him being on his own. That makes sense.
But I will say, in terms of bad guys and movies, like in all of these movies, really, I, you know, Terminator aside, human bad guys, Alan Rickman, far and away, one of, you know, probably the least of the 80s cheeseball movies is the best.
If the kind of in the near future distance of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves wasn't there, because it's 91, you know, it's not so far in the future that we should bring it to the show perhaps right away, but boy, I really want to watch that again after watching this
one. I
want to
watch Dogma again after a while. I mean,
right?
When you talk about his, you know, not going to do a monologue, if he did that, then this turns into Robin Hood, basically, and it's a goofy, fun, little bad movie, but he would still do it good enough to make it fun enough to watch. You know what I'm saying? So
In a way, it's almost what he doesn't say in Die Hard that makes the performance so rich. It's his facial expressions where he's kind of looking with loathing and contempt upon Ellis. And
even if he did it, though, he'd have found a way to make it. It wouldn't have made Die Hard would be a lesser movie, but he would have somehow made it work in a fun way that I don't know. He's one of the best out there. I'm surprised he didn't do more. You know, It seemed like there was. I know he did a lot of stage work, so that's probably part of it, but I don't know.
Someday, I hope to see an honorary Oscar someday.
Oh, I gotta imagine that's, unless, yeah, that would suck if it didn't happen, but, yeah, so yeah, favorite, you know, Die Hard versus Predator, let us know what you think, Die Hard versus Lethal Weapon, let us know what you think, and...
Let's keep it to Die Hard versus Predator, because those are McTiernan movies released a year apart from each other, both 20th Century Fox properties, both Joel Silver.
I think Jason's going to answer, so it doesn't matter.
Are we going to put Die Hard through the flick chart at the end of the show?
Of course.
All right.
Yeah.
Anything else on Die Hard before we move on?
I've seen it. I've seen it at least 20 times, and to see it 20 more times before I'm dead.
Yeah, me too.
I bet you I've only seen it 6 or 7, oddly enough. But I'll probably see it 3 or 4 more times.
And every year on Christmas.
Nope. 1988.
88 this week. Of course, Die Hard is the major, most successful release. In fact, there are other films this week to talk about. We'll get the odd, Dirty Harry last film out of the way. It's called The Deadpool, not Deadpool. And Deadpool
is... Oh, shit, I watched Deadpool. Separate.
Lucky you.
The Deadpool are three separate words. Okay, the coolest thing that I can say about this is that at some point Jim Carrey shows up. I believe Axl Rose is in the film, too. You've got Guns N' Roses music in the film.
There are whole bands in the movie.
Okay, that's what I'm remembering then, because I watched all of those Dirty Harry films like within a week of each other. I was so impressed with the first one, and then lesser so the second one. The rest are garbage. This is the lesser of all of the Dirty Harry films, but it looks the most modern, which doesn't work for it because the other ones are like Dirty Hollywood, you know? Not just because it's called Dirty Harry, but it's they're made in a grainy fashion, you know? He's a very rugged character, and in this one, they do the superhero treatment of Dirty Harry. Liam Neeson is even in this as a bad guy who, at that time, he said, I can kick Clint Eastwood's ass. I mean, just like you're kicking Liam Neeson's ass now.
Kick both their asses.
But it's a frenetically paced film that isn't very good, and everything that you liked about the first one doesn't show up with The Deadpool.
Is his gun bigger?
on the cover, it sure looks like it. That's one large magnum right there.
Is this the one where Suzanne Summers goes swimming, or is that?
It's a good question. It's officially been over 10 years since I've seen this.
Which one's the parody movie where they go to pull out the Dirty Harry gun and it's like 10 feet long?
Batman.
Batman.
Was that Batman? Okay.
When they're on top of the cathedral.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I know Guns N' Roses weren't even happy about being in the movie in hindsight, because Clint Eastwood hates rock and roll so much that he made them like look really bad in the movie, apparently. I don't even think they were Guns N' Roses yet either. Well, they had to have been, but when they filmed it, I don't think they were.
I just remember hearing the music, that's for sure, and I thought I saw Axl Rose, which means you're right about them being on screen. Because I don't have that up in front of me right now, we'll talk about A Fish Called Wanda here, and then if you're able to help me out with the remaining two by naming them, I'll be able to talk about my thoughts on those. A Fish Called Wanda, though, I remember waiting to see this for a long time. Knowing the principles involved, though, that it was going to be a Monty Python-type movie got me excited to watch it as an adult. And what ended up happening was I had a really negative experience with this film. Kevin Kline and Jamie Lee Curtis, John Cleese, Michael Palin, et al. Are a part of this film. And it's supposed to be a heist film involving a particular thing. I think it's money or property or something like that. Please forgive me if I'm missing a beat. You'll fill in here, I'm sure, just in a moment, because it's been over 10 years since I've seen this one as well. But I remember being so disappointed in this as something my parents talked about going to see, and this is a babysitter night for me as a 9-year-old, you know. Oh, my parents are going to see A Fish Called Wanda. Oh, that sounds funny. It's going to be like Monty Python and the Holy Grail, right? Oh, it's rated R. That's weird. It's nihilistic. It only has a couple of running gags going along with it that I remember laughing about involving languages. Beyond that, I'm pretty much unimpressed with A Fish Called Wanda, according to my memory.
Yeah, you know, I didn't see it in theaters, but I saw it like 2 years later, and I was trying, as a kid, I remember trying very hard to like this movie, because, you know, Roger Ebert had called it the sixth best movie of 1988, and he'd given it 4 stars, and I was like, oh, if Roger likes it, clearly I'm going to like it. And somehow psychically I tried to convince myself that you know, I would impress Roger Ebert if I liked A Fish Called Wanda. And so I was trying, and I think as a kid I was telling people that I liked it to try and make them think better of me. I watch it now as a more confident adult person, and I'm like, this movie sucks. This is not fun. These characters aren't fun. This movie, the premise isn't fun. These characters are unlikable, and not unlikable in a fun way. Because, you know, I watched The Producers yesterday just randomly because I had no internet and a DVD, so I'm watching that. And like, those are characters who are, they're criminals, and they're both doing bad things, but they're very entertaining while they're doing it. You know, Zero Mostel and Gene, totally different movie, but I'm getting it that these are amoral characters doing amoral things that are crimes, and they go to jail for it in the end. And they're likable while doing it, and I can kind of root for them in a weird way. I can't root for the characters in A Fish Called Wanda. They're not entertaining enough. They're not charming enough. They're not interesting enough. They're just nasty, ugly people. And the promise of, you know, having two of the Monty Python guys there seems to promise some kind of slapstick fun. And then Michael Palin's whole thing is that he ends up accidentally killing 3 dogs in gruesome fashion. And it's not a funny running joke. It's just, it doesn't make me laugh that he's doing that. And that he feels bad about it. I don't feel bad for him that he feels bad about it. And he's got a stutter. And the stutter is a joke that runs throughout. And the stutter is supposed to make him seem a little more sympathetic. And it doesn't. And nothing in this movie makes me laugh. Aside from maybe, I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis is pretty sexy. And watching her writhe around as people speak foreign languages, I guess, that's the her funny bit.
Works better in True Lies.
Kind of, yeah.
The writhing or the...
She's sexy, but to no point.
Yeah, it's a movie that hasn't really stood the test of time. You know, it was big at the time, you know, when it came out. I'm in the same boat. I couldn't see it. I had to wait till a few years later because it was literally the same thing, a date night for my parents, which they rarely went to movies. But then... You know, and probably to your point, Sean, I probably pretended to like it for a little bit, but then you don't hear it brought up anymore when you talk about, you know, you hear When Harry Met Sally pop up back, you know, movies that, you know, comedies that come back when you're talking about them. This one doesn't seem to pop up in the pop culture world anymore. Ever. No.
And Kevin Kline won an Oscar for this. For this.
Oh, no kidding.
Like, what the hell?
Sometimes people are nominated when they shouldn't be, let alone win.
I should have looked to see who he beat. He had Best Supporting Actor in 1988, but he didn't deserve it. He didn't even deserve the nomination as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I can look it up here in a little bit, but we can go ahead and do the top five before we get to the rest of 88 films.
Put your top five. Who's your top five?
Top five movie fish. Let's see here. There was nothing on Instagram, was there?
No, there was.
Did literally anyone respond?
Oh, yeah. We got two.
All right.
Cousin Jeff, Nemo from Finding Nemo, The Piranha and Piranha, The Barracuda and Barracuda, Bruce the Shark and Jaws, and Abe Vigoda and The Godfather.
He wasn't Fish and Godfather. Fish was a character he played on television. You're stretching, damn it.
That's what happens. Christina had Kill Orca from Orca, Mutant Creature from Leviathan. Does that count? It's amphibious.
Yeah, totally.
Three smart Sharks, Deep Blue Sea, Two Weird Sea Creature, Deep Rising, and of course, Jaws. Do I need to read yours, Josh?
If you don't mind.
Number five, Amphibian Man from The Shape of Water. Four, Bruce, Jaws. Three, The Humpback Whales from Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. Two, Marlin from Finding Nemo, and one, Edward Bloom from Big Fish. I stole your number five because I don't know what to call him. Is that his name in the
movie? Yeah, they list him as the Amphibian Man in IMDb.
And I was going to try to be funny, but then I just got lazy. So four, Flounder from Little Mermaid. Three, Flipper from Jerry Maguire. Two, Bruce from Jaws. And then number one, Ariel from The Little Mermaid.
Okay. It's not her fault. She's just drawn that way.
I was going to, like, there was part of me wanted to make the joke, and the other part, I had a funny story that goes along with wanting to name my daughter Ariel, and then my wife was like, you're a redhead, I'm fair-skinned, she's probably going to have red hair, do you really want your daughter named Ariel to go to school with red hair? She'll get made fun of, so we didn't name her Ariel. That was the only purpose of putting her on the list, either to make a sex joke or tell a story about my daughter. Sean, what do you got?
I got a couple serious ones I would put in there, like, you know, obviously Nemo and Dory. Ponyo. Ponyo is a pretty good one. Miyazaki movie from 2008. You could argue the guy from Shape of Water, maybe, would be a good choice. I would have to go, of course, the number one fish of all time is the fish that saved Pittsburgh. Julius Erving, Meadowlark Lemon, come on.
Yeah, okay. I know of that from reputation only. I don't think I've seen.
Shout out to movie. The Incredible Mr. Limpet as well.
I thought about putting that on there just for fun. 1989 Best Supporting Actors. God damn it. Why am I in Best Actors? Wait, hold on.
Rain Man is kind of a weird film for this year because you have Dustin Hoffman and Tom Cruise as conceivable leading men, but Hoffman won the Best Actor award. I'm not sure if Cruise was even nominated.
No, he wasn't.
Alec Guinness, Little Dorrit, Martin Landau, Tucker, The Man in His Dream, River Phoenix, Running on Empty, Dean Stockwell, Married to the Mob. It was a shitty year for movies.
Yeah, like, and you look at that and you go, Tim Robbins nominated for Bull Durham, which would be way better than Kevin Kline in Fish Called Wanda, like 1,000 times better.
Alan Rickman in Die Hard,
exactly. Not nominated. Not even nominated.
It's not even the Best Supporting Actor of the Week.
The only thing that stood out from A Fish Called Wanda with Kevin Kline is that
Jamie Lee Curtis's boobs.
No, Kevin Kline himself.
Okay.
Is that he could do something other than be a professor or be somebody that was who was a little devious, you know? And he's kind of a hitman, character, thief thing in A Fish Called Wanda, so that at least expanded his abilities in my head.
The other two 88 movies, Track 29, starring Teresa Russell, Gary Oldman, and Christopher Lloyd.
That one seemed really interesting to me. Not for the Teresa Russell angle, but Gary Oldman and Christopher Lloyd working together seemed like a hell of a combo to at least experiment with.
A doctor's wife tires of his obsession with model trains and spends her days wondering about the son she gave up for adoption at birth.
No.
While eating at a roadside cafe, she encounters a British hitchhiker who turns out to be her son. They spend time together trying to find a bond. The son begins to hate the husband, and the wife begins worrying about the safety of her husband and his train set.
His train set.
I'm back on board.
And I'm back in.
Here I was thinking it was going to be a music-based film, Track 29. No.
Nope, train set.
Yeah.
If nobody gets murdered by having a train set shoved down their throat, I'm not interested.
Ooh. But Gary Oldman was kind of crazy back then, so I'm somewhat curious. And then the other one was It Takes Two.
Oh,
George Newbern, Leslie Hope.
Oh, yeah, Romance.
I only thought that was a Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen movie.
It was, with Steve Guttenberg, if I'm not mistaken.
In Texas, the naive Travis Rogers quits his job to marry his beloved Stephanie and work with his father-in-law. That is your promise. Here's $100 million. Go.
More like your star is George Newbern.
More like 100 grand.
Who the fuck is George Newbern?
Father of the Bride, the guy that marries the bride. He also the voice of Superman in animated stuff. I should stop talking.
Who is he? You didn't answer the question.
Who's George Newbern?
Basically, the stats didn't matter. I still don't know who
it's
he is.
It's a rhetorical question.
It's like Ben Mendelsohn for most of America.
Man, you're really rough on Ben Mendelsohn.
Next week.
Is Ben Mendelsohn on your Patreon? Who is that you keep talking about?
He's a character actor. It's the week of sequels. Equalizer 2, Mamma Mia 2, Unfriended 2. I believe Caddyshack 2 turns 30.
Ugh, that's grim.
So we decided to bring a movie to the show that we know Sean doesn't like, but Josh and I like very much.
As opposed to bringing Caddyshack and having that make sense, I could not see myself watching two golf films in 1 week, let alone one. I mean, Caddyshack 2 I've seen a number of times because it was like HBO's cheap. Oh, hey, we can get that one for $10, so we'll play it a lot in the afternoons.
You know you don't have to watch all these, right?
Have to, want to, need to. They're all in the mix.
Yeah, so we're going to do Children of Men, just because why not? We've been talking about, really since the first year, how Sean doesn't like it.
And it's not bad enough I have to suffer a Mamma Mia sequel. Now I get this.
Mamma Mia, what about Equalizer 2? Or
well, at least I get to see Denzel. He's at least entertaining.
Old Man Washington. And because of that, our top five is, what, male action heroes you think you can beat up? Or is that too, do we need to make it more broad? Are you guys afraid to beat up someone other than Steve Buscemi?
Oh, no, I think that's a great category.
I mean, do we need to just say males in general? Do we need to kind of knock it down a little bit and get Steven Root and Steve Buscemi out of the mix?
I don't know. Steven Root could use a mean stapler, you know, or something like that. I was thinking, I like this category because it finally gets it out in the open. Not just you. We don't need to take aim at you. And then we can have our own actors whose ass we think we can kick.
So now it'll be more than just Liam Neeson and Denzel Washington on mine.
Right.
And Harrison Ford.
I'd never said that before, I don't think, but he was going to make my list.
Old man. Got my eyes on you, Jared Leto.
He's going to keep kick Eastwood's walker out from under
his stool.
Yeah, I was going to say that chair. Yeah. Although I'm pretty sure I could beat young man Eastwood as well. if he doesn't have his gun, we're fine.
Have you seen Any Which Way But Loose?
And snap his arm.
All right, could you take his monkey, though?
In
that
no.
The orangutan. Okay.
No. I'm not that stupid. I'm stupid, but... But yeah, that's the show. Next week's gonna suck, so we'll do our best. Hopefully, the children of the men, children of men, not children of the men.
that's a different one. I'm sure we could find that too. But
combining children of the corn and children of the men. But we'll try. We'll, hopefully, that'll be fun. And
Children of the Men is a 1980s British drama about a boarding school.
It's remade called The Cider House Rules. I don't even know if that makes sense, but
well, they aborted all the children in The Cider Rules.
All right, no Children of the Men.
This took a weird turn.
Save it for next week.
Only if we could have ended the movie there or the podcast there. But that is our regular show. We will get to Flickshart at the end where we re-rank Die Hard. But I do want to thank our Patreon supporters before we get there. Like I said, we have a new supporter and cousin Jeff at the character actor level. But before we get there, our key grips, Jason Bryant and Charlie Messing. I'm in another. Our character actors are Cousin Jeff, Christina, Sarah, and Josh Paul. I think that's right. I didn't print the list out in front of me, so I apologize if I screwed up.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Our science fiction level is Corey.
May the Force be with you.
Our associate producer is Jason from New Mexico.
Everybody has to eat shaving cream once in a while.
And our movie stars are Dave Sievers and Uncle Jeff.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
God, I feel like I'm forgetting somebody. Jason Bryan is at the key grip level. If I didn't say that, Jason Bryan and Charlie Messing.
Christina? She on
there? Yeah, Christina is at the character level. Character actor level. So if I forgot your name, I will owe you double and we'll do. You get to direct the next show. But yeah, if you want to be a Patreon supporter, ihatecritics.net/Patreon. That's the best way to help the show. And now there is bonus content out there that you have to pay to hear. In The Fiction with Gandhi appears to be a running joke that we haven't mentioned this episode, but we have every other episode.
We haven't prior hit Flick to that. Chart yet.
Yeah, once Flick Chart happens. And the Greasy Strangler kind of faded away from jokes, but it has kind of come back a little bit in the Patreon episode. So if you're a completist and want to hear everything, that's how you got to do it, Patreon. And like I said, we're going to work on the book and other things. And before you go, please go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe to the show, and rate and review the show. That does help us move up the charts and get noticed in the movie categories. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That ought to do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other. We're the best three friends that anybody could have. I mean the three best friends that anybody could have. The friends that three best friends that anyone
Die Hard or The Game?
Die Hard.
Agreed?
Yep. Die Hard or I Love You, Man?
Die Hard.
Agreed?
Yep. Die Hard or School of Rock?
I have to think a little harder about that one, but Die Hard.
Die Hard?
I will probably take School of Rock, but I'm not going to fight too hard on it. Die Hard, Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Another one where I have to think a while. I mean, I like Close Encounters a lot, but I really adore Die Hard.
I value science fiction more than action, and the past year and a half watching Close Encounters, I really loved that experience, so I have to take Close Encounters.
So when you're doing the genres, do you rank genres? So are, like, science fiction...
Genre bias.
Does that mean closer to a real movie than action?
Indeed it does. But I would not say that Die Hard is worse than, say, Arrival, just because Arrival is a science fiction film. you know, they would elevate or escalate or de-escalate based on their merits alone, not just by genre.
I'll take Die Hard. Die Hard or Ghostbusters?
It's Die Hard for me.
Ghostbusters in my top 30. I'll have to stick with that.
That's Ghostbusters for me as well. Die Hard or Spider-Man 2, the Sam Raimi version?
Whew. I mean, that's really hard because Spider-Man's pretty freaking awesome. Die Hard.
Die Hard.
I'll go with Die Hard as well.
Now, maybe if Spider-Man 2 is directed by John McTiernan, I mean, then...
Then it would suck.
Fuck you.
Thank you. Thank you. A little bit of your own medicine, everyone.
Die Hard or 7?
7.
7.
Yeah. You can only be so funny. Die Hard or Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
Die Hard.
The number shall be Monty Python.
It's probably Monty Python for me, but recency bias made it closer than it should be. Oh, this will be fun. Die Hard or Rocky? You know my vote.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I
real movie versus genre movie coming.
Subcategory sports.
Sports movie versus action movie.
Oh, it's not a sports movie.
Subcategory.
Rocky.
Drama. Subcategory sports. These are both in the unranked 50, between 50 and 100 for me, but it is Rocky over Die Hard.
I don't like when Rocky pops up in here. It's my kryptonite. Die Hard or Finding Nemo?
Oh, fuck. Fuck.
Two movies you thought you'd never compare.
I know, right? Die Hard.
Finding Nemo.
I'll go Finding Nemo since Josh went with Rocky.
This is not a tick for tag game, but I'll take
it. I know, but usually when I don't know, I side with Josh because I've never sided with Josh. When is a coin flip? That's how I land. Number 35.
That's not bad.
Spider-Man 2 is really high up on our list.
What, do you want to move it?
Well, I don't care. There's a lot of movies we could move. But 35, number 25 is The Shining, 26 Goodfellas, 27 The Reservoir Dogs, Breakfast Club, 7 Clerks, Godfather, Monty Python, Rocky, Finding Nemo, then Die Hard. And Spider-Man 2, Groundhog Day, Citizen Kane. The problem is, I really don't think we could move Citizen Kane super high because we're getting to the point where these movies that we like probably more than we should.
That's the joy of doing like this Die for Hard. So long. We're Die Hard. Just some meat and bones of this. Some harder decisions. It'll only get better from here.
All right, you want to try some randoms?
Sure, why not? Let's rank movies. Come on, country internet, you got this.
I've gone back to using my own flick chart at home, and I can't stop. It's crack. I mean, it's internet crack.
Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, XXX.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. Horribly so.
Any Pirates of the Caribbean. I'll take the shittiest Pirates of the Caribbean over XXX.
Agreed.
Death Proof or Poltergeist?
Death Proof.
Poltergeist. Well, we're talking about 82 Poltergeist.
Yes, okay. Of course. Man, this comes down to I know I should pick Poltergeist, but I like Death Proof too much.
I picked Rocky.
I know, but this isn't a coin flip. Fast and the Furious or The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
Fast and Furious.
Fast and the Furious.
Good Morning Vietnam, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Oh, Good Morning Vietnam.
Christmas by Vacation.
By a lot. I like Good Morning Vietnam a lot, but...
Yeah, Christmas Vacation wins. It's weird how that happens. This is a fun one. Hotel Rwanda or Grown Ups?
I'll take the feel-good Hotel Rwanda.
So much more fun.
Hotel Rwanda.
I had more fun at Hotel Rwanda.
All that genocide just really warms the cockles of your heart.
At least it's not Adam Sandler.
Spider-Man 2, Babe.
Spider-Man 2.
Babe.
I'll just pick Babe.
I picked Rocky 2.
I know, but I always agree with you. But I do like Spider-Man 2 a lot. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back or Beetlejuice?
Jay and Silent Bob.
Beetlejuice.
Jay and Silent Bob. X-Men 2, The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Nightmare Before Christmas.
I'll take X-Men United.
Okay, the cut is called X-Men 2, but...
Yeah, they're wrong. First of all, it was X2, X-Men United. There was no X-Men.
It said X2. I apologize.
Oh, no. You're fine. As long as they got it right, that's all I care
fucking
about.
Fucking flick chart.
All right. If they don't call Alien Resurrection Alien 4, then I'm going to be okay, you know?
Plus, I like to just say shorter names sometimes. Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, 2003, or Phone Booth, 2003.
Phone Booth.
Yeah, that's funny. Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines.
Wow. Phone Booth.
Phone Booth is a good movie.
So you really do like Terminator 3.
Yeah. There's parts of it that fail spectacularly, but then it's a real movie, and Jonathan Mostow is a legitimate director. Like, Breakdown is a really underrated movie to me. And he did, I think, what he could with Nick Stahl. I mean, and no Linda Hamilton. You know, he had a lot going against him, and he still created one of the most memorable endings for me in terms of genre pictures. We're not talking about land-breaking film here. Just, man, it really sticks with me.
Does he leave his wife as well in Terminator 3 like he does in Breakdown? Kurt Russell goes with the guy or his wife goes with the guy and they get separated and it's just like, go together.
Right. Right.
We got a skyscraper scenario here. The movie doesn't have to happen. The Incredible Hulk, 2008, Minority Report.
Minority Report.
Minority Report. There's another guy whose ass I can kick.
Tom Cruise.
Edward Norton, you said?
Yeah, I'll take him.
Have you seen American History X?
Oh, listen, he's not like that now.
Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, Die Hard with a Vengeance.
It's Die Hard by a lot. Die Hard with a Vengeance.
My favorite Die Hard movie. Wish that would pop up. Die Hard versus Die Hard 3. Make Josh make a decision on that one. Internet's making it tougher. Ocean's 11, Magnolia.
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 Ocean's 11.
There's a reason why I didn't pick that for the classic next week. It's Magnolia. I just said, because we're doing a Tom Cruise episode next week, and I decided on the classic for next week is Born on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Specifically because I just didn't want to hear him piss and moan about Magnolia.
Oh, man, I really do want to watch Magnolia. I still might, just in case.
Bad Boys or The Hunt for Red October?
Bad Boys is more fun, so Bad Boys.
Hunt for Red October.
I'm going to go The Hunt for Red October. I like watching Sean Connery eat.
And try and be Russian somehow. It still comes out as Scottish.
It's not bad.
It's entertaining. Apollo 13 or Hot Shots Part 2?
Oof, boy.
This is easy for me. It's Hot Shots.
I like Apollo 13. I think it's good.
I do too, but I like Hot Shots more than I should.
Hot Shots Part 2. The Rambo parody specifically is so good. It's so good. It really just ruins all of Rambo. So that's why Hot Shots Part 2.
I'll take Hot Shots. Apollo 13 is such an obligatory film, even if it is fine.
Good word for Apollo 13. Deadpool 2016 Monsters, Inc.
Ooh. Yeah, again, you couldn't find anything more different. I'll go Monsters, Inc.
Deadpool.
Or Deadpool. Rated R always beats G. A Knight's Tale or The Nutty Professor, 96.
Knight's Tale.
Yeah, I finally watched A Knight's Tale last year for the first time after it was handed to me, and I watched it. It is.
It's better than you thought, isn't it?
It's better than I thought that it would be. Yeah, better than the other one.
A lot funnier than I thought it would be, too.
Yeah.
Which I guess is kind of distracting.
It doesn't seem right, but it still worked somehow. It's Heath Ledger.
Air Force One, The Jungle Book, 67.
Air Force One.
Air Force One.
Unbreakable, Inspector Gadget.
Unbreakable.
Unbreakable.
Sideways, Reservoir Dogs.
Ooh, now here, this is tough, because Reservoir Dogs is incredible, but so is Sideways. I think I relate a lot closer, obviously, to Sideways, so I'm going to go to that one.
Are you sure?
I'll go with Reservoir Dogs. Thomas Hayden Church, there's something about him in that one. I don't know. It's not a bad movie, of course.
I'm going to go Sideways. I think, as much as I like Reservoir Dogs, I think it's lesser Tarantino. Bruce Almighty, Snake Eyes.
Boy, I love that. I love that scene in Snake Eyes, the unbroken camera beat that he does. But it's
about all that movie has.
That is about all that movie has. So yeah, Bruce Almighty, Jim carries that movie pretty well.
Bruce Almighty.
I agree. The Silence of the Lambs and X-Men: Last Stand. Is that the proper way to
say it? It's
Silence of the Lambs. Thank you, Bob.
Chronicle, North by Northwest.
North by Northwest.
I like Chronicle, but it's North by Northwest.
Never seen Chronicle, but it's North by Northwest.
That's the Dane DeHaan breakout movie.
And breakout he did.
Well, that's a Josh Trank or Trask or whatever Trank. His freaking name is, the Fantastic Four, the guy that got let go from Star Wars movie, you know, blah, blah, blah. Chronicle's really good. That's going to be the pinnacle of his career, I think.
Big Fish, The Elephant Man. I don't think I've seen The Elephant Man.
Honestly, I don't think I may have. Maybe.
Not enough to rank
not,
it.
No,
all
really.
Right. We'll replace that with Schindler's List.
It's Schindler's List.
I know what the better movie is, but I would watch Big Fish. I don't ever plan on watching Schindler's List again, so I'll have to pick Big Fish.
Right now it's Schindler's List, but I think if I went back and watched Big Fish, I could maybe throw a recency bias in there to help move it up.
But could you beat up Ewan McGregor?
I don't know.
Not if he had the high ground.
Pulp
Bob
Fiction.
Has no idea what I'm talking about.
Nope. And honestly, I don't know much about. I probably could beat up Ewan McGregor. He was in the Star Wars movies, right?
He's wiry.
Exactly. All right, last one. Pulp Fiction or Sister Act?